For me to live is Christ. For me to die is gain. Every moment in between, there'll be joy and there'll be pain. I can't worry about the future or change a thing about my past. I've got this moment to believe, and I'm gonna make it last. I am filled to be emptied.
This is Pastor Michael Rogers from The Jar at 702 H Street Northeast in Ardmore, Oklahoma. Thank you for listening to our broadcast today. We've been walking through the Old Testament just to give ourselves a foundation for our faith and understand how the Old Covenant led to the New Covenant and how God's character is shown through the Old Testament and makes it easy for us to recognize that character in Jesus in the New Testament if we are looking. And last week we talked about the Ten Commandments, and we went through those and talked about just really what he's asking us to do is to honor the truth, honor life, honor contentment, honor the things, honor our mothers and fathers, but most of all, honor God. And the first commandments were all about honoring God. And we're gonna kind of fast forward a little bit here, but we want to catch you up.
Thank you.
So we're gonna go ahead and just talk a little bit about those chapters while you're getting to Exodus 32. We'll be in the NLT when we start talking. It just says things in such a plain language that we like to give you a chance to understand what God is saying. So, here's the thing. Whenever the Ten Commandments are given, there is a conversation between Moses and the people where they recognize, they see the mountain and they see all the thunder and lightning and everything that's going on, the smoke and the darkness where God is. And they're like, you know what, Moses, you go speak for us. We're going to trust you. You go speak for us and we're going to be fine. We'll just listen to what he has to say through you. And so Moses does. He becomes their spokesman to God and from God. And he takes that very seriously. But through the process, God is also bringing other people up on that mountain. There's a point where God says, hey, well, bring Aaron with you. And so Aaron's been up on the mountain. There's a point where he says to Aaron and the 70 elders, Come closer to me. Now, Aaron and the 70 elders don't actually go up onto the mountain. What they do is they come close to it where God is speaking to Moses and to them. And they're hearing about these things. And it's the first time in the journey from Egypt to the promised land where they just are having to sit and wait. And I don't know about you, but anytime I have to sit and wait, I start getting anxious. What's going to happen next? Well, we don't know how long all of these different little diatribes happen, but in the process, God is giving Moses, so what he's doing, he's taking those Ten Commandments and he's fleshing out what that looks like day to day. And so there's all these extra laws about slaves and about living and about strangers and about how we treat each other and everything that are corollaries to the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments wrap all of it up, but all of these laws help us to know what to happen in specific instances. And so God is sharing that with Moses over this time, and it's just taking time. And eventually Moses goes up on the mountain and he's up there a long time.
Well, it's 10 chapters.
Yeah. So yeah,
he's gone for 10 chapters.
So what we think is that he's been up and down and up and down, but there's a point where he's up and he's getting all of this law from them. And it's taking a while because Moses is having to digest it all in a way that he can then share it with everybody else. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't be told something once and remember it, right? So I don't know what it looked like. Maybe God gave him supernaturally the ability to remember, or maybe he allowed Moses in his personality to understand how he could remember all these things. But in some way, shape, or form, Moses is writing all this down. He creates what's called a Book of the Covenant. And then he has a kind of a time where they dedicate themselves to God. And he actually takes hyssop branches and he takes blood from a sacrifice and he sprinkles the people with it. And the people promise to do everything that God has said. We're going to follow God from now on. And then Moses is gone for longer. And it's at that time when there's about 40 days there where they don't hear from him at all. How many times in our lives have we been in a situation where we haven't heard from God in a while? even if we are very close, following very closely, there are just some times where it feels like God is silent. And that doesn't mean that we haven't been silent. We're crying out to him. We're trying to figure out what he wants to say to us and what direction we want, we need to go in order to follow him. But the truth is, when God is silent, we wonder if our prayers really matter. We wonder if God is hearing us anymore. And we wonder what we need to do to get his attention again. And every once in a while, if we're honest with ourselves, sometimes we wonder, is there anyone else up there that we can talk to that might listen? Or we might even just wonder, is there anyone there at all? And if we aren't careful, those times of silence that are meant to build our character, they're meant to build our faithfulness, they can become instances that challenge our faithfulness. And so every week we give you a considered question, and we want you to really think about something that is going to prepare your heart for what we're teaching today out of God's word. And this time, our considered question is, how do you handle silence from God?
All right, like Michael said, we're going to be in Exodus 32. Exodus 32 is where we're going to start.
Yes.
And we've got a lot to cover, so we're going to try to get through it as much as we can, but yet at the same time, let's see what God is showing us, right?
Right.
And so if you're there in Exodus 32, say amen. All right, ready to go.
All right.
Okay, so like Michael said, ever since the Israelites left Egypt, they have had moments where they have shown doubt, fear, uncertainty, right? And we've seen that over and over again as we've been studying through Genesis and into Exodus. But once again, we're going to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
After everything that Michael just said. So beginning in 32 verse 1, it said, when the people saw how long it was taking Moses to come back down the mountain, they gathered around Aaron. Now, I want to point out that word saw there that the NLT
yes.
uses. I remember when I was studying it, I immediately thought, that word saw is packed with a lot of meaning.
Yes.
Okay. What they're feeling, right? So if you would put the word felt in there instead of saw, when the people felt how long it was taking Moses.
That's good.
You know, to come back.
Yeah.
So they were feeling all of those things. Doubt, fear, uncertainty. We don't have a leader.
Right.
Right? They're starting to panic.
Right.
So they go to Aaron. Why Aaron? Because we've seen over and over again, even when they were still in Egypt, Moses would go to Aaron and say, speak to the people about X, Y, and Z.
Yes. God would send Moses to Aaron. Aaron would go to the people or go to Pharaoh, depending on what was going on at the time. And Aaron kind of became known as almost like Moses' right-hand man, because eventually the priesthood is going to come out of Aaron.
That's right. So then they say, come on, make us some gods. And notice what it says, who can lead us? Who can lead us? We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses who brought us here from the land of Egypt. All right. So they're convincing Aaron, or getting ready to convince Aaron, to make something.
Yeah.
So Aaron says, take the gold rings from the ears of your wives and sons and daughters and bring them to me. And all the people took the gold rings from their ears and brought them to Aaron. And then Aaron took the gold, melted it down, and molded it into a shape of a calf. And when the people saw it, they exclaimed, oh, Israel, these are the gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt.
Now imagine, this has not been very long since they were sprinkled with the blood of a sacrifice and said, we're going to follow God in everything that we do. This is the same God who was a pillar of fire and a pillar of cloud. This is the same God who parted the Red Sea. This is the same God who brought them manna and quail and water, and who has been leading them from the very beginning. But now they have stopped and they have stayed in the same place for long enough. They now, it's almost like, I don't know about you, but sometimes when an event is past, I almost feel like maybe it didn't happen. I almost feel like I dreamed it. Is that really, was that meant to get us to this place and then we've got to figure out what to do from here? Or are we supposed to stay here and wait and hear what God has to say?
And before we judge the Israelite people.
Yes.
How many times do we find ourselves in that same spot,
place.
Right? Where
yeah.
we feel like God is silent.
Yeah.
He's not hearing us. He's not listening to us. We're not hearing anything from him. And so what do? We do what the Israelite people do. They try to take matters into their own hands, don't they? And they try to fix it on their own. And what happens every time we try to do it ourselves?
Yeah.
things don't necessarily go the way we had planned.
And that's largely because we're operating on less information than God does. So we take matters into our own hands and we cobble together what we know. And this is what the Israelites do. And that's why they create a golden calf. There's a reason why it's a golden calf, isn't there?
So in verse 5, it says, Aaron saw how excited the people were. So he built an altar in front of the calf. And then he announced, tomorrow will be a festival to the Lord. So we could do a whole sermon just on Aaron.
Just on Aaron. Oh, my goodness.
Through this whole 32 and 33, we could talk about Aaron. But here's the thing. He gives in to the demands of the people.
Yeah.
He doesn't defend Moses. He doesn't remain faithful to God and or protect the people and do what's best for them. You know, he could have said, hold up. That's not what Moses said. That's not what God said. That's not what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And so he crumbled under that pressure, you know, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes when we're with people that are not believers themselves, sometimes we fall into that pressure, don't we? To go along with whatever makes us feel okay, because we're having all of those feelings of fear and doubt and uncertainty.
Yeah, we can look at this and say, man, leaders have it rough. And this is, you know, seeing a leader do this. But the truth is that all of us, to some extent, do something like this. Aaron has seen God working, and he has been a representative of God. And he's been with Moses, at least near the mountain. And he knows that Moses is getting direct revelation from God. But the people are, it's too easy for him to decide to please the people instead of to please God. And once he starts down that road and the people get excited, he thinks, this feels good. It feels good for the people to be excited. I'm the one in charge now. They're listening to me. And that's not going to go well down the road.
Now, two ways to avoid caving in to those kinds of pressures, and we have been preaching about this all year.
Yeah.
Is be patient, which is hard to do when God is silent, and honor God through that patience and waiting. While you're waiting, honor Him wholeheartedly. That's what He's asking us to do when He is silent.
Now, we have to admit, we struggled with this for much of our Christian adult life, is waiting on God, and He had to smack us around and send us down to Ardmore, Oklahoma to really get to a place where we start to understand what that means. But over the last 3 years, that's what we've been having to do. We haven't had any choice. We have had to wait for God to show up in order for us to continue. And I think the group that sponsors us, Nexus, is amazed that we're still around. There are churches that had a whole lot more bells and whistles than we did that are not still open. But God just keeps blessing. And I think it's because we learned this lesson, that in order for us to make the most of the time we're waiting, we recognize that God is still teaching us things. And so we must be patient and honor Him and wait for those lessons to make sense to us.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what happens here, is it?
No, they do not wait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in verse six, basically, the people got up early the next morning and they began sacrificing before this calf. And not only did they sacrifice, but they indulged in what they call pagan revelry.
Yeah.
Now, the calf there represents, we believe, Baal, which is the Canaanite god, mm-hmm. who was in the form of a heifer or a cow.
Right.
And so we believe that whoever the people were that were convincing the rest of the people, remember, these are 2 million people. This isn't 1,000 people or a group of 300 or 400. This is 2 million people.
Right.
Remember that number, because we're going to see that later.
Yeah, later.
It plays
That's
in.
Right.
But they're convincing them, we're going to worship Baal instead of worshiping God.
Yeah.
And so they do that. And we find the people doing that in this moment. And
if you think about it, it's like fitting in. They're worshiping a God from the country that they are going into. And so that makes them connect with the people that are around them. But that's exactly what God does not want them to do. And it's why He's leading them, is to show that He is different than they are,
mm-hmm.
than what they think those gods are.
So this is happening down below. In verse 7, the Lord told Moses, quick, go down the mountain. Your people whom you brought from the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. How quickly they have turned away from the way I commanded them to live. They have melted down gold and made a calf, and they have bowed down and sacrificed to it. They are saying, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt.
That is interesting, because God is seeing something Moses is not, and He's describing it to Moses. Have you ever had somebody describe a bad thing to you, And you think you understand, and then you see it, and you realize it's worse than you thought. Keep that in mind.
So verse 9, the Lord said, I have seen how stubborn and rebellious these people are. Now leave me alone, so my fierce anger can blaze against them, and I will destroy them, and then I will make you, Moses, into a great nation. So we have seen, even in the plagues, you remember, God finally gets to the place where he says, enough is enough.
Right.
It's enough. And this is what we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. God has had enough. And when God, some people look at this and they think, wow, that's pretty harsh. Was God serious? Did he really mean to annihilate an entire nation and rebuild a new nation from Moses? Yeah. I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he was. Now wait, don't turn your ears off, because we're going to learn more about who God is. But in this moment, we are seeing the justice of God. Right? We're seeing that he's had enough at this point.
I think it's important to bring out is that this is the justice of God burning fiercely. This is not God just getting angry out of an ego thing. He's recognizing he is building toward the day when the Messiah comes, and he needs to have a pure people that he can do that through. And so when he says, I'm going to wipe everybody out, but I'm going to make a nation out of you, Moses. Moses is a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's staying true to his covenant that he promised. But he didn't promise that everybody was going to make it. He promised that this line is going to be his chosen people. And so that he's keeping his covenant, but out of a sense of justice, they just learned, honor God. Don't put any gods before him. Don't make any graven images. Don't, you know, honor the Sabbath. All the first four commandments are all about honoring God, and the people completely disregard all of them. And to him, that means that there's no way they can follow the other six. If you are not following God, you're going to find yourself compromising the other six. And so this is that serious that he needs to, I'm going to start all over again. But God is so much more to his character than justice.
Now, one thing I learned long ago as a parent, never threaten any punishment that you don't intend to follow through on.
That's right. That's right.
Kids begin to pick up on that from the time they're like, one. Okay. And Moses certainly took God seriously here, didn't he? He knows when God says, I'm going to do something, he means it. And so what does Moses do? Verse 11, Moses tried to pacify the Lord, his God. He said, oh Lord, why are you so angry with your own people whom you brought from the land of Egypt with such great power and such a strong hand? And then he goes on in verse 13, remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You bound yourself with an oath to them saying, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars. And so he's basically saying, God has had enough. And I've seen what happens when God says he's had enough.
Yes.
And I've got to remind him, Lord, please don't do this. Please don't do this. Now, we're going to see this makes a difference, right? So it says in verse 14, this is interesting. So the Lord changed his mind about the terrible disaster he had threatened to bring on his people. Now you're thinking, he did what? God changed his mind? He's not supposed to do that. He's not supposed to do that. I mean, even in Numbers, God himself tells us, God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he not promise and then not fulfill? That's in Numbers 23, right? And for someone who grew up in the church my whole life, I'm reading this passage and I'm like, wait a minute. My theology tells me that God is supposed to know all things, and he, you know, when he makes a threat, he's going to do what he says. And we're taught that, but we're also taught that prayer is a powerful force, aren't we?
Right.
All right. So I'm talking to my already believers right now. Those of us who already have been in a church or gathering, and we've learned this. So we've learned that God is a God who is always knows what's going to happen, always omnipresent. But we're also taught, that prayer is a powerful force.
Yes.
I mean, Jesus said in Matthew 18, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree upon anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. And James says in chapter 5, the power of a righteous man, which is what Moses was, right, is powerful and effective.
And there's a point where he tells Peter, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven.
Whatever
you loose will be loosed.
So we've been told that we can change things through prayer, but in the back of our minds, there's always this nagging suspicion that even if I pray this, is it really going to matter all that much?
Right.
God is God, and God's going to do what God's going to do. And so there's nothing that my prayers are going to make a difference on. Why bother?
Right.
Right? But what does it say? What when he goes to the Lord and asks him not to do that, and before he asks him and goes to him in prayer, God tells Moses to leave me alone. Did you know that? When he tells him, I've had enough, what does he say? Leave me alone. Why would he do that? Why bother to tell Moses to leave him alone? Why not simply stretch out his hand, wipe out the Israelites off the face of the map, and then tell Moses what's going to happen next? He could have done that right here in this moment. What difference would it make whether Moses approved of his plan? And you know why? Because we're seeing the character of God in this moment, you all. This is key. We're seeing his justice, his righteous justice.
Right.
But we're also seeing God's mercy in this same moment. His mercy. God was ready to destroy that whole nation because of their sin out of righteous anger. But Moses pleaded for the other side of God's character, which is mercy. And God spared them. And this is one of countless examples in the Bible of God's mercy. Although we deserve his anger, he's willing to forgive and to restore us to himself.
Absolutely. There's so much in there. We have been trying very hard to help you see in the Old Testament God's mercy. And so we don't want you to forget that. God is merciful, but he is also a righteous judge. He also sees what is going to hurt us the most, and he is quite willing to keep us from hurting others by stopping us. And that's what he's talking about doing here. This is going to hurt everything I have planned for all time. It's going to hurt everything. So I'm willing to stop this so that I can do that. But he also recognizes that this is an opportunity to prove Moses. That's another thing that we've talked about over the last few months, is that God doesn't test us, he proves us. So in a test, you're looking to see if someone can pass or fail. When you're proving something to someone, you are helping them to see the truth about whatever it is. And God is helping Moses here to see the proof of who he is becoming because of the character he's seen in God. He has seen God's mercy in many ways up to this point. So when he sees the justice of God become the anger and wrath of God, he appeals to the mercy of God. And it proves that God has helped Moses to see him in a complete way.
It also shows that we have been given authority in prayer.
Yes.
Right? Permission to plead with God to alter his will to meet our needs and desires. Sometimes he does it and sometimes he doesn't. It's his decision.
Right.
Right? But that's what prayer is all about. And we've been given that privilege because of Jesus and because we belong to him.
Right.
Right? And at the same time, it's his will, not ours. It's his decision, not ours.
And so Moses is counting on the fact that God is merciful, but he's also a righteous judge. That God is just, but he is also merciful. And this is an opportunity for God to show Moses who he is in total. Mm-hmm. Now he's going to say, the people who need to get discipline for this are going to get the discipline. But because you have beseeched me, because you have asked me, I will not do this terrible thing.
Now, I want to clarify, in what way could God change his mind? I want to clarify this just real quick. God did not change his mind in the same way that a parent decides not to discipline their child.
That's good.
Okay, so don't take what we're saying. It could be easily twisted there a little bit. Instead, God changed his behavior to remain consistent with his nature in a changed situation. In other words, for us as humans, it's hard sometimes for us to have an even balance, is it, of justice and mercy. We struggle with that.
Yeah.
We have a hard time with it being equal and the same. But God is not like that. He is perfect in all of his ways. And so his mercy and justice are equal.
Yeah.
And so he's changing his behavior, how he's going to respond to that based on the consistency of his nature. Does that make sense?
That's right. Because he is where we tend to go by balance. We tend to go by, I'm going to be just, I've been a little bit too harsh and too just, so I'm going to be more merciful. And we kind of go back and forth between the two. But the scripture says in John that Jesus was full of grace and truth. He was full of grace and full of truth. And Jesus reflects the character of God. So God is full of grace and full of truth, or full of justice. Because of that, God is going to be completely just in his dealings, but completely merciful at the same time.
I love when we were studying, you said there is a balanced tension.
Yes.
Of mercy and justice. And we're seeing that in this story.
I see God having a tension between the two. There are times when he needs mm-hmm. to show his wrath and his justice, and there are times when he needs to show his mercy in order for us to understand his complete character. And that tension, it pulls back and forth depending on what's happening in the situation. It's not a balance. God doesn't go, you know, I was pretty angry last time and I went for justice, so this time I'm going to go for mercy so I can balance them out. No, he is looking at what will teach the people the most, his justice or his mercy, and he gives them opportunity. And in this moment, he proves Moses has been learning from him what it means. And this is a growing moment for Moses, not for God. This is not God growing up and saying, oh, I guess I was too angry for this. This is God moving in Moses' heart so that Moses can reflect God's character, and that makes him a better leader, which is why later he's going to show his glory, even if it's just his backside to
right.
Moses.
Now, the other part of this is we're human, so we don't always see everything, do we?
That's right. That's
we're
right.
not omnipresent. We're not over, you know, we don't see all of those things the way that God sees them. So think about that. Look at 14. So the Lord changed his mind about the terrible disaster he had threatened to bring on his people. And then in 15, it says, then Moses turned and went down the mountain. Mm-hmm. He held in his hands the two stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant. Verse 19, Moses saw the calf and the dancing, and he burned with anger. He threw the stone tablets to the ground.
Yeah, I think this builds. Like, he's got these tablets and he's like, this is forever going to be something that we can show the people what it looks like. And then Joshua's like, what's that noise? Sounds like battle. And Moses is like, no, that's not battle. That's what God told me about.
That's a little too much.
I know what's going on there. And there was feasting and drinking and dancing and adult pagan revelry going on. And it is then Moses comes around and they get near the camp and he actually sees it. You remember what I said? You can have somebody tell you something's bad. Yeah. I remember when we lived in Indiana, there was a tornado that hit Henryville and everybody told me about the devastation. And I was like, man, that's gotta be bad. They need help. And so I got a team to go up from my church to help them in Henryville. I had heard about the devastation. Then my son and I were walking around in it. And I just look down on the ground and I see a doorknob and a baby doll next to each other. And those two don't normally go together. But they're just laying on the ground next to each other near a house that has been total.
Yeah.
And seeing the devastation was way worse than looking at pictures on the newspaper or seeing a video on the news. Being right there in it is like, oh my goodness. I think Moses was overwhelmed here. And where God could be angry and just, and at the same time, merciful, Moses was anything but.
No. Moses broke the stone tablets containing the commandments. He lost his temper.
Yeah.
He lost his temper. He was angry. He saw it. Yeah. So I can imagine, when I was reading and studying this, it was almost like God put me in that moment. I almost could see it. Where when God got angry, Moses was like, why are you so angry with the people? Right? Because he wasn't seeing what God was seeing,
right.
was he?
God told
you know?
Him.
And then
he
actually
know.
Sees the sight. He actually sees it and goes, oh. Right? And then he becomes so angry, he breaks
and
the
like
stone
a, like a parent. I've been gone 40 days and this is what happens? It took less than 6 weeks. Come on.
Right.
And he breaks them. Now, those tablets were written by the finger of God. Earlier, we found out that these tablets had been written on by God. He wrote the tablets. And Moses, in his anger, breaks them. So later, God's going to tell Moses, chisel out those tablets that I made for you the last time. Right? So he's going to pay for this. But Moses is not finished when he breaks the tablets.
No, he's not. So he breaks it. And then in 20, he took the calf they had made and burned it. Then he ground it into powder, threw it into the water, and forced the people to drink it. Forced 2 million people to drink it. And so we see Moses' anger here, right? Yeah. Now, yeah. Is Moses' anger, is it not just? His anger at the sin is righteous justice. But unlike God, he didn't do what was right, did he? With the people.
I think he was trying to make a point. And what we learned through our research is that if it was pure gold, it really doesn't have any effect on you. It just kind of passes through you, but it doesn't pass easily. But if it's not pure gold, if there's any impurities in it, it can actually be toxic. And mm-hmm. we'll find out about that later.
Right. So he makes the people drink it. And then we see from 21 down to 21 to 26, mm-hmm. I think, or 25, basically confronting Aaron.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he...
What did the people do to you that you let them do this?
And then he turns to Aaron and asks him why.
Yeah.
Why did you do this? And once again, we could do a whole study on Aaron, but we're not touching on Aaron today. But we see that happen.
Aaron doesn't take responsibility. He just lies about it. Mm-hmm. And it makes it sound like the calf just jumped out of the fire on its own. You know, sometimes when you're trapped like that and you just don't want to take responsibility, you can't even think of a good lie. You just throw out there whatever comes to mind first, and it's almost always obvious, isn't it?
That's right. So then in 26, he stood at the entrance to the camp and shouted, "All of you who are on the Lord's side, come here and join me." And all of the Levites gathered around him. Now, I have to be honest with you, when I said Levites there, I got a little confused, and we had to have that conversation because I was like, okay, I have some questions here, okay? So you want to... Well, talk about that.
The priesthood is going to come through Aaron. Moses and Aaron are Levites. The priest is going to come through Aaron, who are Levites. The Levites are going to take care of first the tabernacle and then the temple. So they are kind of like in our church today, we usually will have one kind of person, either an elder or a deacon, who's kind of leading the church and it's spiritually. And then we have one group that does serving in the church. Aaron is going to create the ones that are spiritually leading the church, but the Levites are the ones that serve in the church. Kind of like in my former denomination, they were deacons, and they were responsible for making sure all the service things happened inside the church. Okay, so when he calls them over, two things are happening. One, Moses and Aaron are Levites, so it's a family thing. Family's like, we got to stick together. But the other piece is, this is where they begin to get set apart so that they can be the ones that take care of things. God is going to honor their faithfulness to Moses and to him. And so they pull him to the side. Now, this is the first time in all of that anger and all of that response, this is the very first time that Moses says in verse 27, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Up to this point, it's been Moses saying.
Right.
God didn't tell Moses to make him drink the gold. God didn't tell Moses to break the Ten Commandments. What God told him to do is, each of you take your swords and go back and forth from one end of the camp to the other, kill everyone, even your brothers, friends, and neighbors. The Levites obeyed Moses' command, and about 3,000 died that day. Now, this is why 2 million is important. What God was going to do was wipe out 2 million people and have Moses be the only one left. And Moses said, please don't do that. And he says, okay. But even though he is merciful, he is still just. And my guess is these 3,000 people were the instigators. They were the ones who caused the whole thing to happen in the first place. And you know how that is? That's how mobs work. There's a small minority that gets everybody else riled up.
Right.
And so God made it possible for the Levites to see who should and should not be killed. And about 3,000 died that day. And so the justice of God was still served. And the mercy of God was still served. And that's what you're going to find in every interaction between man and God, is that God is just and he is merciful over and over again. And that's because God sees more than we see.
That's right.
He's seeing the future, and he wants to make sure that those who would most easily corrupt the nation must be moved out and eradicated. They can't be left there. That's why later he's going to tell them to get rid of whole nations, because he knows that if they don't get rid of the whole nation, that nation is going to corrupt them eventually. It is to protect the line of the Messiah so that he can save the world for all ages, for all time.
That's right. So then the next day in verse 30, Moses said to the people, "You have committed a terrible sin, but I will go back up to the Lord on the mountain. Perhaps I will be able to." Now the NLT here says to obtain forgiveness for your sin. But actually that phrase there is make atonement.
Yes.
So he is basically, as the leader, going up and saying, "God, please forgive the people."
Yeah, he's not just saying that. He goes up and he says, "God," I find it interesting. Alexander McLaren says this. If you look at verse 32, "But now if you will only forgive their sin," Alexander McLaren points out, this is actually an incomplete sentence. He never finishes what's going to happen next.
Right.
And that happens when we're emotional. Like, he can't think of anything at the moment. And so he says, "God, if you'll only forgive their sin," and he thinks about it, and then he unwittingly makes himself a type of Christ. "I'm going to give myself up, blot my name out so that all the rest can be okay." God says, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to erase the name of everyone who has sinned against me. Now go lead the people to the place I told you about. Look, I already told you before, but I'm telling you again, my angel's going to go before you. Do everything he says and everything is going to be okay. When I come to call the people to account, I will certainly hold them responsible for their sins." Then the Lord sent a great plague upon the people, and he really didn't have to work that hard. All he had to do was let the gold do its work.
Work its way.
So we believe that it was probably impure gold. Mm-hmm. And when Moses made them drink it, they didn't just have issues.
It was the consequences.
Letting the gold pass through their digestive systems. The consequence was there was some toxicity in that gold, and it caused a plague. It doesn't say that anyone died from it. Mm-hmm. It just says that a great plague upon the people came because they had worshipped the calf. And so still God is showing his justice. You may not have been instigators, but you did not stop it. So there is still some consequence, but it may not be as great as it was for the instigators. Mm-hmm. Because you allowed this to happen, this is what's going to happen for you. And I imagine that Aaron got to drink some gold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we go into 33, which we're just going to touch on briefly. So God, basically the Lord says to Moses, "Get going, you and the people you brought up out of the land of Egypt. Go up to the land I swore to give you." And so he sends an angel before them. And it says, "But I will not travel among you, for you are a stubborn and rebellious people. If I did, I would surely destroy you along the way." So God once again shows his mercy and sends an angel before them to lead the way.
Now, it's important for us. This next three verses is about how the people respond. When the people heard these stern words, they went into mourning and they stopped wearing their jewelry and fine clothes. For the Lord had told Moses to tell them, "You're a stubborn and rebellious people. If I were to travel with you for even a moment, I would destroy you. Remove your jewelry and fine clothes while I decide what to do with you." So from the time they left Mount Sinai, the Israelites wore no more jewelry or fine clothes. You see, they had taken all of those spoils from Egypt. Remember when they left for Egypt, the people of Egypt had given them all these wonderful things.
They left rich.
One of the things that we haven't brought up is that at some one point they had pulled together resources for the tabernacle. And the people had already given a lot of good stuff for that. And here God is saying, "You know what? I'm taking even that. You can't even have that right now, because right now I need you to understand how serious this is of what you've done." Have you ever done that as a parent? Have you ever had that conversation with a kid? "I want you to know how serious this is. So we're going to do this because I want you to know you have to, what is it? The punishment fits the crime." Mm-hmm. This is not punishment, though. The difference between punishment and discipline, punishment is just meant to make the person feel the consequences of what they've done wrong. But discipline is to teach you to do right. And God is constantly working in a position of discipline rather than a position of punishment. But there is a point where God says that's enough. And so 3,000 got the punishment because they had gone beyond what God was willing to allow them so that he could protect the rest of the people from them.
That's right. then we make a shift in verse 7. It was Moses' practice to take the tent of meeting and set it up some distance from the camp, and everyone who wanted to make a request of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. And then it goes on to talk about how there's a pillar of cloud that hovered at the entrance, and when the people saw the cloud, they would bow down. Moses would go in on the people's behalf. Now this is the small, when I say the small T, not the big T. They haven't built the tabernacle yet. Right. This is just a tent of meeting, okay? And so Moses goes into this tent of meeting to talk face to face with God. And when you skip down to verse 12, it says, "You have been telling me," this is Moses talking to the Lord, "you've been telling me, take these people up to the promised land, but you haven't told me whom you will send with me. You've told me, I know you by name and I look favorably upon you. If it is true that you look favorably on me, let me know your ways so I may understand you more fully and continue to enjoy your favor. And remember that this nation is your very own people."
I love it that he says that, because I don't know if you noticed this in the story, but God has been saying, these are a chosen race. These are my people. And when they have the golden calf, he tells Moses, go get your people. Carrie and I have done that with our own kids. Like if our kid's doing something wrong, suddenly it's the other one's kid.
That's your right? daughter.
Go
That's
get
your, son.
Your people. So you Moses is saying, hey, I want you to remember, these are not my people. They're yours. And it shows that Moses is learning humility. He just had this display of anger in front of everyone. And now he's coming to God. But now when he comes to God, he's recognizing that this is a place of humility. He can't come and be the dictator now. He's got to come and be the one who is serving.
There's a couple things here, though. One is he's meeting God as a friend, isn't he?
Yeah.
And why did Moses find such favor with God? It certainly wasn't because he was perfect or that he did everything right.
That's true.
Or powerful. Rather, it was because God chose Moses, and Moses in turn relied wholeheartedly on God's wisdom and direction. And here's the thing, friendship with God is not out of reach for us today either, is it?
That's true.
Jesus called his disciples, and by extension, all his followers, that's all of us who are already believers, his friends in John chapter 15:15. And then you'll notice too, in verse 14 and 15, Moses began to display his anxiety, right? About God not going with him. He's like, I'm not sure about this, Lord. You know, I'm not sure, you've got to go with me.
Yeah.
But how does God respond? He says, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. Moses knows that God and his presence can satisfy the needs of those that are his. God says, I will give you rest. You can be his friend and he will give you the rest that you need. Yeah. But then he goes on.
And he yeah. recognizes the difference that God is making, mm-hmm. because he has seen the Egyptians and seen how they have worshiped what they have worshiped. And he's now seen some of Canaan and seen how they have worshiped. And he says in verse 16, your presence among us sets your people and me apart from all of the other people on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you are with us and the great things that you have done set us apart from everyone. He learned this from Jethro, his father-in-law. Everyone's talking about what you've done for us.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're with us, it sets us apart. And that's still true today. Because God is with you. In fact, if you believe in Christ, because God is in you, he sets you apart.
That's right. He reassures Moses in that moment. And then Moses' response in 18 is, then show me your glorious presence.
Yes.
Show me your glorious presence. Moses wanted to see him. He wanted reassurance. He wanted to know God, didn't he? He didn't want him to just be his friend. He wanted him to know him. And here's the thing. We cannot see God as he really is and live apart from Jesus. It says that in John chapter 14.
Yes.
But the good news is that Jesus has promised to show himself to those who believe in him. Now, why his glory? Why would Moses choose that word glory? The Hebrew word for glory in the Old Testament is kabod. It means weight. It suggests something which radiates from the one who has it and leaving an impression behind. The New Testament word is doxa, and this word can be defined as beauty. So God's glory is the beauty of his perfections. So basically he's saying, God, leave your impression on me and your beauty of who
yes.
you are
yes.
on me. And so this isn't just a flippant request, is it? He's asking God to show him who he really is. And we're going to see that the Lord answers.
Because he is who he really is, we need to remember who we are in him. So one of the things we talked about was that we can learn from this is that it is absolutely right for us to be angry at sin. It is righteous for us to be angry at sin as long as we remember the mercy of God. When we only remember is the anger that he feels at the sin, then we forget half of God's character. So when we are angry at sin, it is righteous, but it is necessary for us to remember the mercy of God so that we act within the character of God when we're talking to people.
So the Lord answers his request, but not fully. And he says, I will make, verse 19, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will call out my name, Yahweh, before you. For I will show mercy to anyone I choose, and I will show compassion to anyone I choose. But you cannot look me directly in the face and live. Look, stand near me on this rock. And then he basically covers his face, Moses' face. And when God walks beside him, then he's allowed to look at God, but only from the backside.
That's right.
Only from the backside. I will remove my hand and let you see me, but my face will not be seen. Yeah. And so he not only shows him his glory, but also shows him his name. He proclaims his name as Yahweh. It's just a beautiful moment. It's a very intimate moment. And so I guess our question to you today is, are you willing to stand upon the rock and boldly ask, as Moses did, show me your glory.
Yes.
Show me who you are, God. Jesus wants to show you that. That's why Jesus prayed in John chapter 17, verse 24, Father, I want those you have given me to be where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world.
Yeah.
He wants us to know who he is. He wants us to be familiar with him. Why? So we can be a changed people.
That's right.
When we know him, we're changed. If we're not changed after knowing him, then we really don't know who he is.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Jar with Pastors Michael and Carrie Rogers. If you'd like to support our mission, you can go to www.thejarministries.net. and look for the Give button in the top right. Your sponsorship allows us to continue ministering to the least of us in our great city of Ardmore, Oklahoma. Thank you so much.
I am filled to be